she was, you know, I think it was four.
Thank you very much. So it's a pleasure to be here in Perimeter and to give a talk with the title Hidden Symmetry of Correlation Function Amplitude n equal to 4 Supersymmetric Angle Theory. And this is work which is done in collaboration with Burkhard Eden, Paul Heslop, and Emery Sakachev. And it's based on the paper which appeared this morning in archive. Do you want to make an announcement, Pedro? Do you want to make an announcement?
No.
Okay. So let me first say a couple of words about the title. So this will be talk about maximal supersymmetric Young-Mills theory, and we'll be talking about two different objects. One of them will be correlation function, another will be on-shell scattering amplitudes. And these two objects are naturally observable, one can define in any gauge theory, and especially in conformal field theory. And by the definition, these two objects, they carry some information about properties of your theory, and this information is quite different. If you're talking about on-shell scattering amplitudes, you scatter particles which are asymptotic states, which live long enough, and then scatter through the S-matrix. In this way, you detect some on-shell properties of your theory, like S-matrix, whereas you go to the correlation function. By definition, correlation functions are defined for finite number of points, for finite number of distances, and all particles which you will find propagating inside the loop, they will live short distance. And therefore, these are so-called off-shell quantities, and these off-shell quantities carry information about off-shell informations like anomalous dimension, coefficient, function of the OP expansion, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Therefore, a priori, these two quantities are supplementary, and they carry different information, but taken together, they give us hope that at the moment we will know both of them for arbitrary value of the coupling constant. When combined together, they will give us full solution to the theory. And there was quite a lot of development on both subjects. You have heard yesterday a few nice talks about the amplitudes, and indeed, over the last 5 years, there was a breakthrough in our understanding of the amplitudes. A lot of things have been found, various dualities, a lot of conjectures, et cetera, et cetera. And it will be fair to say that understanding of the amplitudes was developed quite far comparing to the scattering amplitude. And for the correlation function. And the correlation function situation is slightly different. At the first years after development of the JCFT correspondence, there were a lot of efforts put to calculation of the correlation function. We have a lot of prediction coming from supergravity approximation. Whereas at weak coupling, the progress was much lower, and at the moment, maximum we could say about correlation function is explicit tube calculation. Another development happened last year when it was actually realized that there is a certain limit in which correlation function every turned out to be related to each other. In other way, these two seemingly different objects turned out to be related to each other through a very special limit. And once you accept the scattering amplitude has a lot of symmetry, hidden symmetries, integrability, whatever you like, and there's a relation between amplitude and the correlation function, you have to immediately deduce there should be some additional symmetries for the correlation function which are induced by symmetry of the amplitude. And the main goal of this talk is just to show you that indeed we find some manifestation of such of the symmetries. And this symmetry is hidden because, again, this is not the symmetry which you will naturally find looking at the Lagrangian. And so you'll see, at the moment we will continue in my talk, you will see this hidden symmetry appears only after you start looking actually in the expression for the correlation function, the amplitude obtained at the quantum level. In that sense, you could say the symmetry is dynamical. But let me be more specific, and let me sort of introduce you the main actors of this play, namely the correlation function amplitude. Let me start with amplitudes, and to be specific, I will be talking about gluon scattering amplitudes. So gluon scattering amplitude depicted here, so you have here S matrix, external lines will be spinning for gluons, and these asymptotic states, which are parameterized by here color charge, which will be a joint representation of the SU gauge group, on-shell momenta and the helicity, and for the gluons, the helicity taking value plus minus one corresponding to transversal polarization. So then it becomes very convenient to decompose the planar limit scattering amplitude of a certain basis of such traces, which takes care of the color structure. And now the problem of computing scattering amplitude reduces to the computing of such partial amplitudes, which are function only on the helicity of the momenta. And to simplify things as much as possible, I will be talking about simplest amplitude, which is four gluon MHV amplitudes. And if you remember from yesterday, Young's Plevka talks, MHV means you have two pluses, two minuses. So for example, amplitude like this, two gluons pluses, two gluon minuses, this is just simplest example of four gluon MHV amplitude. So let's look for ratio of this amplitude over H3 being expanded the power of the Hoof coupling constant. So it starts from 1, 3-level, and then there is one loop correction which are parameterized by certain Feynman integral. So this Feynman integral depends on Mandelbrot time invariance, S and T. And here, what stands here, I1, stands for a certain function. And this function is given by the following integral. So here you have shown in black Feynman integral with P1, P2, P3, P4 corresponding to the external onshore momentum of gluons. And here you have a loop. So this integral is divergent because you're dealing with the massless particles. And to regularize divergences, you introduce dimensional regularization by taking your space-time dimension to be slightly away from 4. Then it turned out to be very useful, and there is a lot of good reason for this, to change a variable to go from the momentum, so-called dual coordinate. So instead of dealing with speed, we go to axis. And you will see a lot of axis appearing in the rest of my talk. So instead of dealing with 4p's, I'm dealing with 4x's, and it's convenient to think about the axis as sort of coordinates corresponding to these 4 regions. And then if you rewrite this divergent integral term of the axis, what you obtain this. So you have x5 corresponding to the loop momenta, and 4 propagators which attach together at this point x5. And since all momenta are light-like, you have to impose the conditions that all distances between external points are light-like. So you're dealing with the situation of 4 axes which are subsequently light-like separators. And then you could continue, you could go to 2, 3, 4, 5 loops, and actually at the present we have explicit expansion of these amplitudes up to 5 loops in terms of scalar integrals, and as I told you, there's a lot of conjectures. Some of the conjectures allows us to sum this series for arbitrary value of the coupling constant and even to compare this ratio with the strong coupling prediction. But I'm not going to do that far. Let me now switch to correlation function. And for the correlation function, again, we were going to talk about simplest correlation function, namely correlation function of 4 protected operators. So we're dealing with the n equal 4 theory, which has 6 real scalars. Then I've taken 2 of these scalars constructing this complex field Z, and out of the Z, I'm constructing 2 such operators, trace Z squared, trace Z bar squared. These are operators which have scaling dimension 2, because each scalar has dimension 1. And the nice things about these operators is they are protected. By this, I mean that the scaling dimension of this operator doesn't receive quantum corrections. There is no normal dimension to any value of the coupling constant. And moreover, all 2 and 3 point correlation functions don't receive quantum corrections. In other words, they're taking their value dictated by 3-level Lagrangian. The simplest correlation function which receives quantum corrections will be 4-point correlation function. Namely, you just take 2 operators of one kind to another operator of another kind, so the total R charge will be 0, and then becomes the simplest correlation function you could study. And again, this correlation function could be computed, and it's convenient to parameterize it as a 3-level expression times something which comes from the loops. And again, you go through standard calculation, and you will find that one loop correction parameterized by a certain Feynman integral, which call here G, which depends on 4 external points. And this integral has a nice form in configuration space. Again, integral with 4 propagating denominator, an integral over 5-dimensional point. Let me emphasize that as soon as this axis and general position, this correlation function is finite, any value of the coupling constant, therefore all integral which appear in this expansion are perfectly well defined in 4 dimensions. Therefore, there is no need to introduce this regularization. You see, the integral is 4-dimensional. Integral well defined. But now, if you compare the integral which we have seen on previous slide, this one, and this one, you immediately realize that the integral looks almost the same. The only difference between these 2 integrals is that they're defined for different kinematic configurations. So this integral is defined for a situation where all distances are arbitrary, non-zero, whereas for the amplitudes, you ought to have a situation when each 2 subsequent points are light-like separated. So therefore, in both cases, you're dealing with the same integral, but defined for different kinematic configurations. And once you realize this, it gives you a lot of information. So namely, first of all, what you can do, you could compare the integrand. So the integrand standing here, the integrand standing here, you see it's exactly identical. And once you realize this, you could formulate the conjecture that if you compare the integrand for the correlation function for integrand for the amplitudes, this should coincide. So there is power 2 here. But up to this power 2, sort of this one loop example gives you sort of idea how the duality should work. And actually, this duality relation has been verified quite extensively up to 3 loops, and they believe that this duality actually is exact duality in equal 4 theory. So let me emphasize one again, that this duality is supposed to hold at the level of the integrands, not at the level of the integrals. Moreover, it holds only in the planar limit, in the planar equal 4 theory. So it is these relations which give us some idea there should be some additional hidden structure inside the correlation function, because I told you that for the amplitudes we have a lot of symmetries, and once we believe there are such relations, all symmetry of the amplitudes should be automatically present for the correlation function. And we want to find this additional symmetry which is present at the level of the correlation function. So how we could find sort of the trace or hint for this new symmetry? Let's return back to this one loop example. Again, let me rewrite here the ratio of one loop correction of the correlation to its tree. And I told you this ratio is given by such integral. You have four propagators attached to some point x5, and it's convenient to represent this integral as the following Feynman diagram. So each of these four denominators will correspond to solid line going from 1 to 0.5 to 5, etc., etc. And then integral of x5 tells you that these lines are connected together. So this Feynman integral is kind of naturally represented as so-called cross diagram. Now let's do the next step. Let's remove the integration. Let's go to the integrand. So I remove integration. What I read that integrand of this ratio just given with the product of four propagator. So what's special about this product of four propagators? First of all, since correlation functions should be explicitly symmetric at the exchange of the external points, there is no surprise that this expression is perfectly symmetric at the interchange of any pair of the external points, 1, 2, 1, 3, etc., etc., but it is not symmetric at the exchange, for example, 1 and 5, because 5 is a special point, stands for the integration point. Now let's do the following. Let's start from this expression, and let's write the following. So what I do, I just multiply the denominator and numerator by the following factor, which actually given by the product of all possible distances between four external points. So you have four external points, and then here you have all possible six distances between these two points. Once you do so, the same product appears in denominator, and it's easy to see what will happen after that here you will have a product of all possible distances between all five points. And again, this product could be conveniently represented as a Feynman diagram. In this case, it's Feynman diagram like that. So you have five external points, and each pair of points connected by line. And now if you look for this expression stating here, you immediately realize that it has more symmetry compared to this expression. Namely, it's now symmetric at the exchange of all five points. And among these five points, there is four external points and one internal point. So this is a crucial observation. But now you could say that this is like triviality, right? I could start from some simple expression I just wrote in such a way to have the symmetry present. And then the question is there any doesn't make any sense to do this. And the punchline of my talk will be to show you that once you go to higher loops, namely if you go here from one loop to any loop level, what you will find is the final expression for the integral will have exactly this form. Namely, you will have some factor which exactly is this one, and the information of the coupling constant will be sits inside this square bracket, namely this simple diagram which comes from one loop calculation will receive contribution from higher loop levels. It was crucial that all higher loop corrections which will appear here, they will have this cyclic symmetric symmetry. And as you will see later in my talk, this information alone is so powerful that it allows you to predict expression for the integrand to the correlation function to any loop level up to a finite number of parameters. So this will be the final outcome of my talk. But let me show you how it comes about. For this, I have to give you some additional information about the structure of the correlation function and n equal 4 theory. And more specifically, we have to introduce the object which is called n equal 4 strength tensor supermultiplet. So the first thing you do, you already seen on my previous slide, special operator which was trace this square operator, and this operator is one of the representatives of a much bigger family of scalar operators which are called half VPS operator made out of two scalars. So again, you have six real scalars n equal 4 theory, and what you construct operator will look like this. So this is an operator which has naive scaling dimension 2 built out of scalars. I and j correspond to the SO6 in this symmetry corresponding to the R symmetry of your theory. So this object which stands here on the right-hand side is completely symmetric traceless tensor. And as a consequence, it belongs to the irreducible representation of R symmetry group, which is called 20 prime. So this will be as the operator whose correlation function we would like to study. And then, since it has these SOC indices, we'd like to simplify our life, not to deal with these indices. And the simplest way how you could simplify your life, just choose some light cone vector in this six-dimensional space and to project both indices on this light-like vector. These are more or less the same things as normally people are doing, so-called SL2 sector, dealing with these two operators. So let's now introduce this six-dimensional null vector in this isotopic SO6 space. He called YJ, YI, I from 1 to 6. And now let's consider the following object. So I project all indices I and j into this null vector. Instead of dealing now with tensor and dealing with a single scalar function, but now information about this isotopic structure is hidden in this y variable. So there's a reason why I put now y as another argument of my operator. And now this operator will be just given simply by the trace of phi I phi j with each I and j projected on the y. Then what you do next, you lift this operator into superspace. Namely, what you do, you start applying to this operation supersymmetric transformations. And in N equal 4 theory, you know you have four supercharges, so you have Q and Q bars, four supercharges. And now what you do next, you're just looking only for one so-called chiral supercharge, Q. And now what you do, you're applying this supersymmetric transformation with special parameter rho, which is Grassmann variant parameter, to this operator O, scalar operator, to get out of the scalar operator the whole supermultiplet. So the lowest component of the supermultiplet is given by this operator. And then if you continue further, all the way up to the maximal value of the rho, which is 4, quite remarkably, what you'll find, the top component of the supermultiplet turned out to be Lagrangian, so-called chiral on-shell Lagrangian N equal 4 theory. So this is a very crucial property of N equal 4 theory. The fact that you were able to pack scalar operator into Lagrangian the same multiplet will have tremendous consequences, as you will see in the following. So what's the meaning of these parameters rho and y? So once you introduce y, you choose particular direction in your isotopic space, and the consequence of what you did, you just broke covariantly your R-symmetric group down to these three subgroups. Similarly, instead of dealing with four thetas, what you did through the decomposition, you projected four component theta into two compositional rho. So now instead of dealing with Grassmann variables theta, which we indices from 1 to 4, we're dealing with a smaller rho values with a taking value only 1 and 2. And as I told you, by the construction, this object is supersymmetric, and quite remarkably, actually, it depends only on the half of Grassmann variables. As a consequence, it's annihilated by the half of supercharges. This fact actually has to do with the fact that this object is called half BPS. So once you have this object, again, it's a very important object, what you could do next, you could look for this term and see, is it possible to extract Lagrangian out of this supermultiplet? It's quite trivial, since this Lagrangian always appears the maximal power of the rho, it's sufficient to integrate the superfield by the Grassmann variables rho, that this integral will just select in this decomposition only top component. So the action on equal for theory is just given by the integral of the superfield. So now what we'd like to do next, we'd like to calculate correlation function of this object, which is lowest component superfield, using for the Feynman rules action, and action itself given in terms of the same superfield. So you see the same superfield appears twice, both defining your operator inside correlation function as well as defining your Feynman rules. And these will be crucial. So how to compute this? So again, let's start from this correlation function. So I define these four scalar operators, and then what we do, we expand this correlation function in powers of coupling constant. Let's emphasize that at this level, I don't need to impose the conditions that I'm dealing with planar and equal theory. For me, number of colors just arbitrary parameter at the moment. So let's start from the three-level expansion. So I take lowest terms of the expansion, three-level, and the three-level, this correlation function obviously will be given by the all possible weak contraction between scalar fields sitting in each vertex. And since O is given by the product of two scalars, what you will have pair of scalar propagators attached to each vertices. Then you have two contributions. One contribution, so will be connected when point one and two talk to each other as two propagators, and there will be connected pieces when each four vertices will be connected by single propagator. So these disconnected pieces, which comes with some enhancement of power of nc, and this one comes with power nc squared. So this y, I remind you, this variables y, which sits in the argument of the scalar operators, they carry information about SU4 indices. So if you wish, you could unfold SU4 structure dependence, just looking for the various indices which comes with these y's. And again, here I put some two permutations. Why? Because this correlation function, as it stands here, should be symmetric under exchange of each pair of the operators. And obviously, these two terms are not cyclically symmetric. So you have to put some two permutation to make it completely symmetric under exchange of any pair of particles. So now we do one more step. Now we go to loop level. So at the loop level, we have the compute correction, which appear here proportional to the coupling constant. And instead of computing, we're just using sort of conventional Feynman rules. We're using so-called the method of Lagrangian insertion. So what's the idea of this method? The idea is very simple. Let's look for the derivative of the correlation function with respect to the coupling constant. And let's write this correlation function as a path integral where I put dependence of the coupling constant in front of the action. You can always rescale your field so the dependence of coupling constant will be seen in front of the action. So now if you hit this object with this derivative, what you will find is that this derivative will act only on the action, actually on the prefactor of the action. And what it will do is it will just bring this exponent down into integral. And the consequence will update at the end, you will obtain integral over some additional point x5 of the correlation function with additional insertion of the Lagrangian. So in this way, what you'll obtain, very powerful relation with the derivative of four-point correlation function with respect to the coupling constant is given by the integrated five-point correlation function with additional insertion of the Lagrangian. But now if you look for this relation, if, for example, you go to one loop level, what you will find here, so at one loop level, this object will be exactly one loop correction to the correlation function. And what you will have at loop at three level, at the level of this object, you will have something which will tell you that one loop correction to the correlation function with four operators will be given by the integrated three-level correlation function of five operators. In this way, what you gained, you related one loop objects to three loop level objects. And then you could continue to any loop level, and finally what you will obtain to any loop level L, the L loop level correction to four-point correlation function will be given by the three-level correlators involving L additional insertion of the Lagrangian to the three-loop level. And then, once you compute this three-level correlator, you have to integrate over insertion points of these Lagrangians. Again, what's crucial here is that you correct, you relate loop corrections to three-level correlators. So it's sufficient to know these three-level correlators to predict loop correction to the correlation function. But now, let's look carefully into this relation. I told you a few minutes ago that Lagrangians and the scalar operators belong to the same supermultiplet. Therefore, what you do next, you want to rewrite this correlation function in terms of another correlation function, which now builds only on this superfield. Remember, this is just all the operators OL, a particular component of this T. And if you manage to do so, what you'll obtain, quite a remarkable relation. There's a correlation function of four objects like this will be related to the integrated three-level correlations of the same object. It becomes some kind of very consistent equation relating the same objects at different loop level. So how to do this? So again, you return back and you look, let me construct four-point correlation function involving only four of these superfields. You remember that each of the superfields was given by the expansion of power of the Grassmann variables. Now, what you have to take into account is that this correlation function in n equal 4 theory has full superconformal symmetry. And since we restricted ourselves to so-called chiral sectors, what you have to do, you have to take into account that there is only half of the exact symmetry. Namely, you have so-called chiral supersymmetry and anti-chiral superconformal symmetry. So these two supersymmetries are exact at the level of these correlators. And actually, this two supersymmetry allows you to show that actually this correlation function doesn't depend on Grassmann variables at all. In other way, the correlation function of superfields reduces for 4 points the correlation function of the lowest component. So this Bosonic correlation function and the correlation function actually are the same thanks to this exact superconformal symmetry. Next step, you introduce now correlation function which involves many of those T's. And again, if you're using these exact supersymmetries, this supersymmetry allows you to eliminate certain number of Grassmann variables, and you could show that the maximal component, which has maximal number of Grassmann variables, will be the one which contains only 4 minus L those components, L minus 4 those components. You see only rows with indices. Here I put 5 row 4 pi L, but there is no row 1, no row 2, no row 3. And here you have some dots, and dots stands for another terms which have either permuted indices or less power of row. But what's important is the maximal power of rho is the one which you could read from this expression. And now the coefficient which appears with rho, it's exactly this correlation function which you have seen on my previous slide. So if you think about this prefactor here, it's exactly the correlation function which appears in the right-hand side of this formula. So now once you take into account these relations, this becomes the final formula which you need. Namely, L-loop correction to four-point correlation function we try to find is given by the integrated 4 plus L correlation function of superfields integrated over the Grassmann and Bosonic components. And then, again, next step you do, you go from the integral to the integrand, namely just remove this integration of the Bosonic variables. And what you obtain is that the integrand for this L-loop correlation function is simply given by the integral of this object with respect to Grassmann variables. And here, 5, et cetera, 4 plus L stands for the external point, so not the point which appears here. This is the point which corresponds to the initial insertion of the Lagrangian. Right? So now the goal is the following. Let's try to find this correlation function. At the moment, we will know this correlation function, three-level correlation function. For arbitrary L, we automatically will know this integrand. Is it possible to do so? The statement is yes. Actually, you will see that we could predict this object here without doing any Feynman graph calculations by only taking into account the symmetry of your theory, in this case, the Kupffer theory. Is it possible because of the number of things? First of all, as you will see, this object here has quite a nice symmetry, and I will explain you later. We call it new permutation symmetry, which acts on all points it depends upon. Secondly, I told you that we also know, in addition, the correlation function reveals quite nice relation to the scattering amplitude of the special light corner limit. We will show that once you go to light corner limit, this duality between amplitude correlation function imposes further constraints. And now, if you take into account this symmetry together with constraints, we will see that this information becomes sufficient to reconstruct the form of this object to a loop level. Let's see how it goes about. So let's start first with looking for the explicit expression for one and two loop integrands. Or in this case, it will be 5 and 6 point correlation function of 5 and 6 superfields computed at 3 level. So this zero stands for the 3 level. So let's look for this correlation function. So you have 1, 2, 4, 5 points in which you put these superfields. You go through 3 level calculations. This becomes the result. So the result looks as follows. So here you have standard color factor, and here you have two other factors. One of them depends only on the bosonic distances between external points, and there you have I5, and this becomes a function which takes into account dependence on Grassmann variables as well as those Y variables which are related to the SU6 symmetry group. And here I put some additional terms. These are terms which have lower degree of Grassmann variables, and you will see they are irrelevant. We could throw them away. We just need only terms which have maximum number of Grassmann variables. Then you go to 6-point three-level correlation function. Also, you go through explicit three-level calculation. This becomes the result. And you see the structure looks exactly the same. Again, you have color factor, some function which depends on the bosonic variables, some another function which I will tell you in a second how it looks like, which take care of the dependence of Grassmann variables, and some terms of lower Grassmann degree. So there is some structure emerging, right? So what kind of structure do we observe? First of all, these I's. So I told you these I's take care about Grassmann dependence. Since this correlation function have to have exact superconformal symmetry, and you could easily see that this prefactor have exact conformal symmetry, you have to deduce that these I's should have exact superconformal symmetry. These are objects which have nice transformation properties under superconformal transformation. So they depend on all points, in this case 5 and this point in 6, and they should have exact Q and S bar superconformal symmetry. Moreover, by the construction, this object should have dependence on the row in the form of the polynomial of certain degree, which is 4 number of points minus 4. And actually, if you look for the expression for these two guys, you will find that it has the following form. So there is some dependence on x's, some function which you have here, and there is all those Grassmann variables which you're looking for. So these are just maximal powers of each row which appears here. This function R depends only on 4 points. And it depends only on bosonic coordinates. It also has some nice form, some rational function depending on x's and y's. What's remarkable is that if you look for the explicit expression for these y's, not at the truncated level, but at the foot level, you will find that this function turned out to be invariant on the exchange of any pair of points. Another way, you start from this expression, you change 1 and n, you see function is invariant. You change any other pair of particles, it also be invariant. And finally, if you now take into account these conditions, you will find that the only object which has this property is actually this y. Another way, if you impose from the very beginning the condition of superconformal variance, you will find that the only solution which satisfies those conditions is this function I, which is explicitly symmetric under all exchange of the points. To put another way, what we have here an example of the superconformal invariant, which has a certain degree of transcendentality, and this superconformal invariant at the level of this Grassmann degree turned out to be unique. It's exactly because it's unique that it appears in this expression. If it were not unique, you had just sum of two terms. So once you realize that it's unique, you could go on and extend this relation. So if you go from 5 to 6 to any number of points, and you require this object to be exactly super conformal invariant, it has to be proportional to this invariant. The only freedom which left over, it will be freedom multiplying by some function which depends only on the bosonic X variables. And since everything should be super conformal invariant, this function should be conformally covariant as a function of the axis. So in this way, the problem of computing this object for arbitrary value of the point L reduces to finding this function, which is function having certain conformal properties. And in addition, since this object by the construction should be invariant under exchange of any power of points, and this invariant also by the construction is invariant under any exchange of the points, this function also ought to be invariant under exchange of any power of particles. So this hidden symmetry that I mentioned at the beginning of my talk. So the symmetry of this function under exchange of this any points is exactly this new symmetry that we are seeing here. A couple of comments. First of all, you could go through similar analysis with series with less number of supersymmetry. You could show that, for example, for n equal 4 symmetry series, this symmetry is not there. It's only for n equal 4 series. And let me emphasize one again, this symmetry is exact for arbitrary number of the color. There is no any planar limit which we assume from the very beginning. Finally, you remember that the whole idea of this Lagrangian insertion method, that we have this 4 plus L points. Among these 4 plus L points, only 4 points will correspond to the external lines. Another point will correspond to the insertion of Lagrangian, and those points are integrated over. The fact you have exact cyclic symmetry here means that you put external and internal points on the equal footing. And this becomes very powerful constraint, as you will see in a second. So what do you know about this function f? So I told you this function should be completely symmetric, it should have nice conformal property. And here just two examples. So since we know for 1 and 2, L equal 1 equal 2, which means 5 and 6 points, explicit expression for this function, it's convenient again to have some diagram associated with them. So this function we already have seen at the beginning of my talk is just this 5 points with all possible distances between these 2 points. So now let's look for this function f2. So this is a function which will define the integrand to loop level. So this function has this nice form. So you have sum of all possible permutation of 6 points. In denominator, you have product of all distances between 6 points. In numerator, you have some additional factor connecting points with indices sigmas. So now, if you just expand this expression and open the sum, you will find the sum factor in numerator and denominator cancel each other. So at the end of the day, you will find a diagram like that. So in this diagram, again, you have 6 points with distances. They're not all possible distances. For example, sigma 1, sigma 2, sigma 3, sigma 4, sigma 5, sigma 6 are not present. Why? Because exactly those distances which are numerator, which cancel some of the distances in denominator. So this becomes sort of the refinement diagram you could associate with these 2 functions. But let me pay your attention that both of these functions for 5 and 6 points have a denominator product involving all points. So the difference between this and this function is that once you go from 5 to 6 points, some polynomial appears here. And the appearance of this polynomial is ultimately related to the fact that these functions have some conformal weights, and having only denominator makes this conformal weight too big, and therefore you have compensated this conformal weight by putting some polynomial in numerator. Now assume that we know this function. So imagine you know this function on loop level. What you will do next? So what you will do next, you will just put this function in your integral and see what will come out. So after you do the manipulation, this will be the final expression for a loop correction to the 4-point correlation function. Again, color factors, this function R, which we already seen, just a specific rational function of external points. And now information about the loops will be encoded in this capital function F, which is given by the integral of all insertion points of this function f you've seen in my previous slides. So once you know the small function f, you put inside the integral, you integrate over the insertion points, you multiply by this factor. And you remember, this is exactly the same factor you have seen in the beginning of my talk. This was the factor which you put in the numerator to make one loop correction cyclically permutation invariant. So now if you look for this integral, you immediately see what will happen with our symmetry after you're integrating. So this function claimed to be invariant on the exchange of any pair of the arguments. But now you have an integral, and apparently this integral separates among all four plus L points certain number of points. So after you integrate completely symmetric function with this measure, you definitely break symmetry, right? This integral will not have symmetry anymore. Therefore, what will happen is that the complete cyclically permutation symmetry of this function depending on 4 plus arguments will be broken down to S4 symmetry after you perform the integration. That is the reason that this new symmetry we're talking about could be found only if you go from the integral to the integrand. At the level of the integral, you will not see the symmetry. So now the question is how to find this function. So again, for L equal 1 to L equal 2, we know this function from a specific calculation, but I promised you we have good reason that we will be able to predict this function without doing any calculation. So how we could do it? So let's go for arbitrary value of L, this arbitrary value of L, so you have 4 plus L points. And now let's make the following ansatz. You remember I told you that for L equal 1 to L equal 2, the function had a denominator product of all distances. Let's do the same ansatz. So you put here some distances, and again, to compensate conformal weight, you have to put here some polynomial. And the degree of this polynomial depends on L, actually it grows with L. So how could you justify this ansatz? So what's special about this ansatz? That if you take inside all arguments, any two arguments, let's say xi and j, and you put xi close to xj, this ansatz tells you that this function should develop a simple pole. In other words, this ansatz comes with additional assumption that the asymptotic of this function should be just simple pole. And if you remember this function f was defining three-level correlator, this amounts to saying that we know the three-level correlator will have particular behavior if two of the operators start going at short distances. Another way, this behavior here is in one-to-one correspondence with OP analysis of three-level correlator. And since we know about OP at three-level everything, going through OP, you could find that it becomes exactly the right ansatz. So maximal fast power pole should be present there. These are consistent with OP. So now the problem of finding the function f boils down to finding the polynomial. So what do you know about the polynomial? So it should be conformally covariant with definite weight. Moreover, since function f should be completely symmetric, a denominator obviously is completely symmetric, polynomial should be also completely symmetric. And now we're about to solve the following problem. Find all possible polynomial which involve a certain number of points which have nice conformal properties and nice symmetry properties. And this problem turned out to be exactly the one that people in graph theory are solving every day. Namely, there is one-to-one map between polynomials satisfying these properties, a so-called multi-graph with 4 plus L vertices of degree L minus 1. I will give a definition of what I mean by this in a second. But if you wish, this becomes quite an expected link between this polynomial, so integrand, if you wish, with some kind of the graph theory construction. So what does it mean? Let's be most precise. Let's go to three loops. So let's go to three loops. It becomes the first time when we don't have explicit expression. We'd like to make prediction for three loops. So three loops, these polynomials, which you see in my previous slides, it should be related to so-called multi-graph 7-11 vertices degree 2. What does it mean? It means that you have 7 points, 1, 2, 3, 7, and a point 1 has two lines attached to it. So this 7 is there, and degree 2 means that each vertex has two lines attached to it. So now you ask the same question, how many graphs could we draw which satisfies this condition? The answer is there's only 4. This one is connected graph. You easily see there are 7 vertices and there is 2 lines attached to each. Then you may have disconnected graph like that when you have 5 points and 2 connected like that. Or you may have triangle and rectangle. And finally, you have 3-component graph, not more. So for each of these graphs, you could associate certain expression. Namely, you associate with this dashed line connecting point 1 and 2 distances, x1, 2 square. Therefore, this object here just given by the subsequent product of the distances between 1, 2, et cetera, et cetera. It's what's written here. And since you remember that the polynomial should be completely permutation symmetric, you have to add here all possible permutation of 7 points. Now you go to this object here. This graph here corresponds to x1, 2, power 4, and the rest like this, and you continue. So in this way, what you obtain is the solution of all possible conditions of polynomial P gives you expression for this polynomial P, which is linear combination of these 4 graphs, if you wish, these 4 expressions, with only 4 unknown coefficients. In other words, the problem of finding this polynomial P3 reduced to finding only 4 numbers. Once you know 4 numbers, you will sum up these 4 expressions for numbers, and you come up with the prediction for the integrand corresponding, in this case, to 3-loop correlator. But the coefficients are arbitrary. So far, coefficients are arbitrary. So how to fix these coefficients? Before we fix these coefficients, let's do one more manipulation. Let's now go back from this polynomial to the function f. Remember, there was some denominator. The denominator removes all possible distances. And again, you repeat the same analysis we did before at 1-to-loop. So you replace p by its expression. There will be some polynomial, some powers of numerator, which cancel some powers in denominator, and therefore this expression will be given by the sum of various terms. And at the end of the day, after cancellation of some factors, what you will obtain is that these 4 graphs on my previous slides are translated into four graphs for this small letter f. Again, here you have graph number 1, 2, 3, and 4, four different graphs. And again, you could see that there are 7 vertices. Now the difference with respect to polynomial t, that polynomial t you had only 2 lines attached to its vertices. Now you have 4 lines. And here, for example, you have 5 lines attached, but then you have some dashed line which stands for the numerator. So at the end of the day, 5 - 1 becomes 4. So the unique feature of this graph is that for each of the vertices, number of solid line minus number of dashed line is 4. This is exactly the symmetry, this is the restriction of the conformal symmetry. So our analysis, again, once you have this p sum of 4 terms, now you have for the f sum of the 4 terms with the same linear combinations, with the same coefficients. And again, I emphasize, this result is exact for arbitrary number of NC. So this is a result which holds for arbitrary number of colors, not necessarily planar limit. But nevertheless, to find those coefficients, we have to impose additional conditions. And I told you, now we take into account that there is additional symmetry, namely this duality between correlation functions and amplitudes. Let me now explain you in a few words what does the duality mean. So I told you this duality is relation between integrand. You look for the integrand for the ratio of correlation function or its 3. You look for the integrand of the amplitude divided by its 3 power square. And the claim is that these two objects at the level of the integrand should match in the planar limit. Starting from this moment, we go to the planar limit. So from now on till then my talk, we'll be talking about planar limits. So now let's now rewrite integrand for this ratio. It will be given by the series and the power coupling constant. Now you can remember this capital F's appears here. And for these guys, I just put these m's denoting correction to the planar scattering amplitude. Now, if you just open bracket on both sides, compare power of the coupling constant, you will find that at one loop level, function f appearing in the correlation function should match the same function appearing in the amplitude. And we saw it exactly from this cross diagram. You remember at the beginning of my talk, I've shown you that cross appears on both amplitudes of the correlation function. Now you go to two loop level. At two loop level, you will find that the integrand of the correlation function in this light cone limit should be related to the integrand of two loop level planar amplitudes plus 1/2 of the integrand of one loop level square. And at three loop level, it becomes more complicated. And we could continue. So now, this becomes quite powerful relation. Why? Because m's here, these m's, they stand for the correction to the planar amplitude. And I told you at the beginning of my talk, we know this guy up to 5 loops. Up to 5 loops, we know scalar integrals which enter into those m's. So m1, m2, m3, up to m5, we know explicitly a sum of certain Feynman integral. For example, m1 is 1 scalar box, m2, 2 loop scalar box, 3 scalar box, tennis court, some classification. And now what you do, you compare right-hand side and left-hand side. So on the right-hand side, you have diagram of very special topology. Now what you have here on the left-hand side, what you will have integral, there will be integral of topology dictated by this graph. Now the question appears, if you now examine topology of these integrals and to match into topology of the integral which appear here, what you will find? And the answer to this question, what you will find is that among 4 topologies which you have here, only one topology will match the same topology. It will be this graph. So this graph number A, C, and D will produce integral. We have nothing to do with the integral which appears in the scattering amplitude. So therefore, if you assume the duality is there, duality alone allows you to throw away all 3 graphs, if you wish put corresponding coefficient equal to 0, and retain only this graph with very special coefficient, 1. So this will be the graph which, from duality relation, you have to retain in the expression of the correlation function. So now you have all coefficients fixed. So once you have all coefficients fixed, you go to the next steps and try trying to see what kind of the integral you will obtain for 3-loop correlation function. So this becomes the expression for this integrand, remember F3, some numerator, some denominator. And now you have to be careful separating the 7 points. You remember the 7 points which you have here as the vertices of this decahedron should be at the end of the day separated into 4 points which will go to the external lines and 3 points which you have to integrate over. So now you have to do, you have to separate 7 points, 7 vertices of these objects into 3 as 4. 4 will be external one. And they're corresponding here to white dots. Remember, these white dots, this one, these white dots. These will be those which will identify at the end of the day as the external points. And 3 solid ones, these 3 black dots. These will be dots which we have to integrate over the end. And now, once you have the simple diagram, there is 5 ways how you could distribute 7 points into 2 sets, 3 plus 4. And therefore, you will find these 5 different configurations. So for each of these configurations, what you do, you take this expression, and multiply by this factor. You remember this factor which just we saw at the beginning of my talk, which is product of all possible distances between external points. And again, what will happen is that some of these factors will cancel factor in denominator, simplifying this integral further. So if you do this analysis till the end, here becomes the final result. So this is the result of our analysis. If you use this as a prediction for three-loop correlation function, four operators, three loops, in planar N equal 4 theory, three-level, one-loop, two-loop, three-loop. Three-loop is a new result. One and two-loop results have been known before. So what do we have here? So one-loop result, you remember this is a cross, just this cross diagram which we saw at the beginning. Two-loop results. So it has a new topology which is shown here. Sometimes it's called two-loop ladder. And now you have this additional term which is cross square, exactly the same integral square, plus some permutation in order to have this function completely symmetric under the exchange of any pair of external points. Now you go to three-loop. So this becomes the first time when you see something interesting. So here you have how many? Five different terms. Again, all this permutation stands for the cyclic, for symmetrizing the corresponding formula with respect to all possible exchanges of external lines. Now you have five different terms. Those which are shown in black, this is a topology which are seen at the level of the scattering amplitude. For example, this guy T, it's called so-called tennis court. This guy L here, it's called three-loop ladder. This object here, you just look carefully, it could be factored out into so-called G and H. This guy times crosses. And now you have this new topology. This E and I, H, if comes from easy, H comes from hat. These are new integrals which appear at the level of three-point correlation function. So these are new topology which are not present at the level of the scattering amplitude. And this, if you wish, becomes sort of quite non-trivial predictions of our analysis. So this becomes easy and this becomes hard. So let's now try to see whether this prediction could make any sense. And we have two tests to make. First test, we have to verify at the end of the day that not only topologies of the integral match, but actually the coefficient in which the same integral enter into scattering amplitude and the amplitude coincide. So you go to this limit which corresponds to light-like separation of external points, what you will find that in this relation, quite of these terms will go away because, for example, this term, you see it comes with a prefactor x12 square, x34 square. Once you take this distance to zero, it goes away, but some permutation will last over. So there is some simplification, and this simplification is just shown here. So once you go to light-like limit, this three function, 1-2-3 loop expression, is just given by this compact expression. And now you compare these expressions with the result of the explicit three-loop calculation of the amplitude, these three expressions. And you could verify immediately that these duality relations, which you had to verify, are these relations, identically satisfied. So it becomes very gratifying that we were able, through the whole construction, to reconstruct this duality. So test number one is okay. Let's now go to the second test. Second test is more delicate. So we have four-point correlation function, and as you know, four-point correlation function knows about anomalous dimension. It's sufficient to go to short distances with respect to any pair of points, and OP automatically will tell you that asymptotic behavior of the correlation function of this limit will reproduce you both anomalous dimension of the corresponding operator and the corresponding three-point correlation function. Let's try to do it. And to simplify our life, let's go to so-called double short distance limit. Namely, what we do, we take point 1 to point 2, point 3, point 4. The reason for that is that this double limit allows to separate only few operators, namely operators which have both small scaling dimension and small conformal spin. Namely, if you, for example, take these two scalar operators, point 1, point 2, and you go to OP, that in this limit, when S1 goes to S2, what will happen, the leading contribution comes from density operator, and it has quartic power of distances, and then you have two other terms. One of the terms comes from the same protected operators, and since protected, it comes with the first power distances. And now you have Konishi. So this becomes the first time Konishi appears on OPE, and it appears with this prefactor. And as you know, Konishi is not protected, therefore the corresponding power is corrected by the anomalous dimension of the Konishi. So now here you have three coefficient functions, density operator, protected operator, the Konishi. These two are protected, which means that there are no dependence of the coupling constant, but for Konishi there is dependence of the coupling constant. So for the Konishi, you have to specify this constant, this one, and corresponding constant is the two-point correlation function, in order to reconstruct completely OPE. And what we do, we just choose particular normalization of the Konishi such that this coefficient D, which defines two-point correlation function, coincides with the three-level expression. In this normalization, the whole dependence will be sits on this function CK, coefficient function of the Konishi, and then we just parameterize this dependence by introducing some parameters alpha, which will play a very important role in a second. So once you have this information, you go to correlation function, you apply OPE for operator 0.1 and 2, similarly 3 and 4, and this becomes the OPE prediction for this asymptotic behavior of the correlation function. Again, the most singular terms come from the density operator. It has quartic power of the distances. And then you have smaller power distances, 1, 2, 3, 4, corresponding contribution from a protected operator. And here you have contribution of the commission. So again, depending on the coupling constants, it's here and there. So this prediction of the P, dots here stand for subleading terms. And now what we'd like to do, we'd like to compare this prediction of the P with our result. We have definite result for three-point correlation function, and if we got it right, we should be able to reproduce the same behavior out of from our ansatz. The constraint goes as follows. So if you go from our ansatz for this correlation function, at the end of the day, you will find this condition. So this function F, which defines loop correction to the correlator, should satisfy the following relation. So here you have U, which is harmonic ratio. In the limit we're dealing with, it goes to zero. So therefore, this becomes the prediction from the OP for small u behavior of this function f, which themselves given by quite complicated integral. So this prediction on the left-hand side involves analysis of three-loop integrals. On the right-hand side, it involves some unknown parameters, a normal dimension of the Kanishi corresponding coefficient function ck. So let's see what will happen if you expand this relation up to three-loop level. So if you expand up to three level, OPE prediction tells you you should have the following form. You have powers of the log of the U, maximal 3, smallest 0, and the coefficient in front of the powers of the logs are given by some combination involving conditional normal dimension in the parameter alpha. You remember alpha is the parameter which sits in the definition of this coefficient function CK. Now let's compare now this OPE prediction with the result of our analysis. So we have three loop integrals involving easy and hard. You turn on your computer, you go through some quite complicated elaborate analysis. This becomes the analysis, result of this analysis. So out of our expression, this is a prediction for small u behavior of the same function of 3. So you see it has exactly the same structure. Maximum power of the log is 3, smallest is 0, with very definite coefficient front. Now you compare first line and second line, and you get quite a number of constraints, both for the anomalous dimension of the Kanishi and the coefficient alpha. And these constraints had unique solution. For the Kanishi, we reproduced known three-loop result, and now becomes a new result for the parameter alpha. One loop, two loop, three loop. This result is known, this also is known, this is a new result. And once you know alpha, this becomes a prediction for three-point correlation function involving two protected period one condition. So as usual, three-point correlation function defined by the normal dimension and this normalization constant C. And what we do here, we predict this coefficient C up to three-loop level. This is the expression, this is the value. So we constructed three-loop four-point correlation function using various constraints, including hidden symmetry plus duality relations, and verify a posteriori that the expressions we constructed went through all possible tests. So this gives us the hope that we got it right. Conclusions. So I was trying to convince you that the correlation function of very special operators, four-point correlation function of the strength energy momentum superfields, have quite new symmetry. And this symmetry is unexpected, and it appears at the level of the integrant. It has to do with cyclic symmetry, permutation symmetry. So this symmetry is only so powerful that it allows us to predict the integrant of three-loop correlation functions up to four undetermined constants for arbitrary gauge group. Once you add supplementary condition for the duality relations, which so far have been checked in various situations, there is no doubt that it should work. We find that this duality fixes actually all coefficients and gives you the unique expression, which at the end of the day passes tests for the OPE. And finally, let me also mention that our analysis was constrained to three-loop, but you remember there was this map into graph theory, and this map is so powerful that it allows you the minimal efforts to write ansatz for any number of loops. So this gives us the hope that we have quite good grounds of constructing all-loop results, and hopefully one will get this all-loop result for these correlators, we hope, at the end of the day, going to strong coupling, reconstruct the expression which are known for many years from supergravity approximation. So this becomes a new field for testing ADS-CFT correspondence. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let us have some questions, but remember there will be some announcements afterwards.
This was very interesting. I have two questions. The first one would be, as I I understood correctly, you, the coefficients which were still in the game, you fixed by matching to the amplitudes, right?
Yes.
The cases which, is there also a dual conformal symmetry acting here which could help you do that?
The whole idea of this duality between correlators and scattering amplitude, that once you realize that scattering amplitudes are related to the correlation function, the dual conformal symmetry of the amplitude becomes conventional conformal symmetry for the correlation functions. Therefore, for the very beginning, this correlation function amplitude duality, actually it was a statement that dual conformal symmetry of the amplitude is nothing else as conventional conformal symmetry of the correlation function. And since conformal symmetry of the correlation function, one of the original assumptions that was in the beginning of this construction, so the whole construction, we automatically satisfying those constraints. If you wish, conformal symmetry constraints is very nice here. It has to do with this diagram. So this diagram here, the fact, if you think about this point has four propagator attached to it. So if you perform conformal transformation, the fact that there is four propagator attached will tell you that this point you have conformal weight four. And now if you go to this point, you will find there is five lines, solid one, undashed. Meshed means numerator. And you will find the conformal weight at this point also four. So each of the diagram is special in the sense that it gives you expression which depends, in this case, seven points, which has the same conformal weight in each point. So these are objects in which conformal symmetry is manifest. As a consequence, once you go from this object to the amplitude, you're guaranteed for the amplitude, this object will give you contribution, which will be dual conformal invariant from amplitude side.
Yes, but the amplitude is also invariant under standard conformal symmetry.
As you know very well, if you want to discuss you're talking about what will happen to conformal symmetry of the amplitude, so this duality. Unfortunately, if you want to discuss conformal symmetry of the amplitude, you shouldn't forget about the fact that scattering amplitude comes with some delta function, involving conservation momenta. And for the correlation function, obviously, there is no delta function. So therefore, at this stage, I personally don't know what it will correspond to the answer to the question, that I don't know what will be the analog of the conformal symmetry of the amplitude, what will correspond in terms of the dual conformal symmetry for the correlation function. Arkady?
I have a second question.
You want to comment?
Comment?
You want to comment?
You have a comment now? No. Okay. So the second question was, it seems like the method would, if you would go to higher points,
yes,
right? It's straightforward.
No. This is a crucial point. The crucial point is here. Let me just give you an example that you know very well. Think about the amplitude. You know that if you look for the super amplitude starts from MHV, NMHV, and then it ends up with MHV bar. Now if you're looking for structure of all amplitude, you know there is two amplitudes that have special structure, which is MHV, MHV bar. Why it's special? Because the dependence on the Grassmann variable for the amplitudes, for these two amplitudes, is encoded only in one function. If you go from MHV to NMHV, you will find quite a number of these R invariants. And once you have the space of the invariants bigger than one, if you want to fix amplitude, you have to fix function which comes with each of these invariants. What's special about this case? So here you have a single function, a single invariant appearing here. So once you go to correlation function for 5 and 6 points, you will be dealing with a situation with exactly the same as situation for NMHV amplitude. In this case, what will happen, the space of such function, such invariant, will be bigger than one. Right?
It's not true that you would capture the MHV series.
Again?
Just the MHV series with your approach.
You remember that I'm talking about four-point correlation function versus four-point scattering amplitude. At this level, you have match between MHV four-point amplitude into this particular correlation function. If you go to more point correlation function, through this map, you will be effectively talking about corresponding amplitude will be not necessarily MHV, but also NMHV. What I want to say is that there is one-to-one correspondence between these invariants, which I call here I, and the corresponding dual superconformal invariant you encounter in the amplitude. So then,
okay. Are there more questions? Okay. Maybe I can also ask. You stressed several times that you took the planar limit. Is there any hope of hidden symmetries beyond the planar limit?
I don't hear.
Are there any hopes of hidden symmetries beyond the planar limit
Yes, these are what I told you. Okay, there's two things. If you're talking about correlator, for correlator, correlation functions, we do claim that this hidden symmetry we're talking about, this additional permutation symmetry, it's symmetry of correlator for arbitrary number of the color. What's special about the planar limit, that if you're staying for arbitrary number of the colors, the correlation function will be dictated by number of parameters, in this case it will be four. The advantage of going to the planar limit, that in the planar limit you have additional information coming from the amplitude, which allows to fix this coefficient uniquely. We are not claiming that this non-planar correction for the correlators will be at the end of the day related to the non-planar correction for the amplitude. And there should be no relation at all. Why? Because we know that once you go to the non-planar corrections for the amplitude, we know that dual conformal symmetry is not present there. And since I told you that through the relation of the correlator amplitude, once you wrote this relation, meaning the dual conformal symmetry is conformal symmetry of the correlators, this link doesn't make any sense at the level of non-planar correction to the amplitude. But it does make sense for the planar correction for the correlator.
Okay, thank you. Just one more question.
For loops for Konishi, as you remember, was sort of important for,
yes.
There are new features there,
yes.
like wrappings.
Yes.
Do you have principal obstacles to calculate, say, for loops?
The answer is no.
This method?
The answer is no. That is the point. That you see, the obstacles which encounter computing anomalous dimensions, the obstacles coming from this approach coming from this integrability bit on that. Here, what we're talking about, for example, let's go to C loop and ask ourselves the question, what kind of information is contained in this expression? Where is the expression? Oh, here it is. No, this one, So you have five diagrams. So now, if you have these five diagrams, and you go through the PN elements, imagine you start from each of the diagrams, and you look, for example, for the limit when one goes to two. The statement is that these five diagrams know about the spectrum of infinite number of operators to three loop level. Now you go to four loop level. At four loop level, you will get number of this integral will be bigger, but it will not be tremendously bigger. It will be like 20 integrals. And then what you will have is only 20 integrals will know about spectrum of quite almost infinite number of operators to full loop level, including Konishi. Konishi will be one of the terms in the study behavior. And the advantage of this approach is that you're not going through the analysis of dilatation operator, looking for the wrapping corrections. You just go through the Feynman integral. So once you have these Feynman integrals written explicitly, all problems assist in the asymptotic behavior of these integrals for distances. If you manage to do so, then the problem is solved.
Okay, last question.
So, correlator of three operators.
Three os.
There is no three-point amplitude, but there is a correlator of three operators.
Very nice.
So what happens?
What's special about three-point amplitudes? The three-point amplitudes, they're protected from quantum corrections. So if you're looking for three-point amplitudes, first of all, this three-point amplitudes, you have to be more precise. Three-point amplitudes on field theory defined for complex momenta. For real momenta, they're not defined. So, but if you go to complex momenta, this object does exist. Then the point is that three-point amplitudes are given by their three-level expression. There is no quantum corrections. Now you go to three-point correlation function of this operator O, and you realize that three-point correlation operator O is protected from quantum corrections either. So at this level, you enjoy the relation between two three-level objects. Is there.
Okay. Let us thank the speaker again.